Chapter 5. Last week we spoke about the wisdom of Shlomo HaMelech, and we took you from chapter 5 to chapter 10 to the Queen of Sheba, and we attempted to explain what was his relationship with the Queen of Sheba. For that matter, she may not even have been a queen. It may have been the kingdom of Sheba. And we're also talking about the fact that Shlomo HaMelech sees as his task in the world not merely the greater glory of the Jewish people, but as he builds the Beit HaMikdash, he sees his task also as Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah U'Devar Hashem Yerushalayim, that he should be the one who is going to send Torah outward, and for that matter, peoples of the world are going to flow toward Yerushalayim. He sees himself as the embodiment, so to speak, of the beginning of a messianic era. That the message begun by Avraham is now indeed going to spread worldwide. Because the fact is, while Avraham Avinu may have been, and certainly has been, a great success when we judge him in the context of 4,000 years, he was not that great a success within the context of his own time. Remember, Torah tells us about Avraham Avinu that when he came from Choron to Eretz Yisrael, he came with Hanefesh Asher Osa B'choron, with the people that they had made in Choron. And Rashi there explains that when they were in Choron and Avraham began to publicize the message of a one God, there were many whom he converted to his way of thinking. So Avraham Megayedet Anoshim, Avraham was the one who converted the men. Sarah Megayedet Hanoshim, Sarah is the one who is teaching the women. What happened to all of those people that had joined Avraham Avinu? Somehow or other they must have disappeared. It didn't last. Because in the final analysis, when he wants to search for a wife for his son Yitzchak, he can't find it amongst all the people who came with him, who he brought with him. He has to send Eliezer back to Paddan Aram, to Choron, in order to find a wife. It means that while Avraham attempted to send the message of God outward to the world in his own time, and there were many who joined him, it didn't last. Obviously, that message, it's going to take some later point in history in which it's going to be done. Now, let's say the following. Avraham already sees himself as the universal Jew. And in a sense, doesn't God tell him, your name will no longer be Avram, but your name is going to be Avraham, because you are going to be Av Hamon Goyim, the father of a multitude of nations. So there's a universal message that comes from Avraham. But that universal message of Avraham, as it passes through Yitzchak and comes to Yaakov, by Yaakov already, Yaakov is not concerned with the world at large, but he is concerned with building his house. As the famous Gemara in Masechet Pesachim says, Avraham was the one who came to the place, and he called it Har, a mountain. Har Ha. Bayom Ashlishi, he sees the mountain from afar. Yitzchak at that same place refers to it as Sadeh, a field. Vayetze Yitzchak Losuach Basadeh. Yitzchak went out to pray in the field. When Yaakov finally comes there and he has that dream of the angels of God going up and down the ladder, he says, Ein ze ki im Beit Elokim. He sees it as the house of God. That means Avraham sees it as a mountain, maybe a peak rising all over so that all can see. Yitzchak already begins to see the concept and the idea of bringing the message to the world of a one God. He sees it as Sadeh, something a tremendous amount of work is going to have to be put into it. One is going to have to plow, one is going to have to plant. It's not something that's going to come immediately. And then Yaakov ultimately is the one who sees that it's going to have to start with one family and work outward. It's not going to begin with that grace, great burst out to the world. It's going to have to focus on one family, and from that family the message is going to go outward. Hundreds of years later, of course, Shlomo HaMelech has already seen the establishment of Malchus Yisrael. They've been in Eretz Yisrael for 350 years, but it took them 350 years until they established royalty. And he now represents not merely the establishment of royalty. Shlomo HaMelech represents already a royal lineage. We're talking about a Malchus, a kingdom that has become established. He may very well, and this is what we were saying last week, but I'm elaborating on it now because it's going to illuminate another one of the fascinating sides of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech sees himself as the one who's going to send the message outward. Finally, he builds the bayit, the ultimate bayit of Yaakov, the house of Yaakov. When Yaakov said, "Ein zeh ki im beit Elokim," this is the house of God, that bayit means two things. Number one, it means that the message of Judaism is first going to have to become part of a family, a bayit. And then there's going to be the ultimate bayit, the Beit HaMikdash, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. It's all going to come out from there. Shlomo HaMelech now has reason to believe, and I think very good reason to believe, he's the one now who has finally built the bayit. Now is the time for it to move outward. Therefore, last week we explained that his many marriages and his relationships with Sheba and all sorts of other places, the purpose of all of this was so that he should be able to send the message from Yerushalayim outward. He had embassies and consulates throughout the world, and the purpose of these embassies and consulates and all of the commerce and intercourse between himself and other nations of the world, its purpose was in order to bring the message of God. And there is a measure of success. What I want to do now is, let's go further in Perek Hay, and we're going to see how it relates to a very unique and unusual relationship. And you can see how unusual it is. It Pasuk Perek 5, Pasuk 15, which means Perek Hay, Pasuk Tetvav. I've learned. Perek Hay, Pasuk Tetvav. Vayishlach Chiram Melech Tzor et Avadav Shlomo. Chiram, the king of Tzor, sent his servants to Shlomo ki shama, because he heard ki oto mashchu lemelech tachat avihu, because he had been anointed as a king in his father's place. Ki ohev hayoch Chiram leDavid kol hayamim. Chiram had loved David all of his days. Back there in Shmuel Bet, we find also something very similar. This is a pattern. I think it's in Perek 8 or 9. It says that David waged war against Edom and Ammon and Moab and Aram. All of the nations around Amalek waged war with everybody, but with one he had a very special relationship. With Chiram, the king of Tzor. Chiram, the king of Tzor, is the one who sent him all of the materials to build his own palace. And it's then afterwards, after he has built his own palace, that he turns to Natan HaNavi and he says, "Listen, I'm living in a permanent home and God is in a tent." That I believe is chapter 7 or 8 over there. And Natan tells him, go ahead, build. That same night, God appears to Natan and tells him, no, go tell David. Go tell David that he's not going to be the one who's going to build the house of God. His son is going to do it, not him. All right. It means that what's happening now is a replay of the relationship between Chiram and David is now Chiram and Shlomo. And the Pasuk says correctly, Ki ohev hoya Chiram le David kol hayamim. Chiram loved David all of his life. Special relationship. Vayishlach Shlomo el Chiram leimah, so Shlomo sent to Chiram so saying. No, it means that first of all, Chiram sent a message to Shlomo, and now Shlomo responds. After your daughter David Avi, you knew my father David, or as we usually translate it, you loved my father David. Ki lo yachol livnot bayit l'shem Hashem elokav, he was not able to build a house for God mipnei hamilchama asher sevavuhu, because he was surrounded by war. Ateis Hashem otam tachat kafot raglav, until God gave his enemies beneath his feet. We had learned some of these psukim, but I'm going to, as I did last week, I'm going to take you from 5 to another paragraph. I believe it's going to be 9. So now, in the message, Shlomo says, now God has given me rest all around. There is no one who attacks. I want to build a house in the name of God, my God. Kasher divar Hashem al David Avi Lemar, as God had spoken to my father David, saying, "Bin Kasher eten tachtecha al kisecha, who yivneha ba'ayit l'shmi." This is what God said to my father, that my father will not be able to build it, but the one who will arise in his place, he is the one who's going to build the house. Va'ato tzavei. Now Shlomo HaMelech's request is command. You should give the command, v'yichletu li'arozim in alavonos, so that they should cut the cedars from Lebanon. V'avodai yiyum avodecha, my servants will be with your servants. Uschar avodecha, atem l'chon avodz, there will be joint patrols up there in Lebanon who are going to cut trees down. And I had pointed out, uschar avodecha, atem l'chon, I will give you the schar for your servants. K'chol asher torah, whatever it is that they have to be paid, I'm going to pay it. Ki ato yodato, because you know, ki engonu isho deo lichrot eitzim katsidonim, you know that we don't have anybody as good as you in order who can lumberjacks, we don't have. And we have pointed out when we first learned this pasuk that there's, on the one hand, there's something very beautiful about this. There are times at which we think that all chachma, we Jews, know it all. Shlomo HaMelech is ready to admit that we don't know it all. There are people, there are talents in the world, and there are other people who know it. And that's the talent I need, and we're going to enter into a relationship with those people. You're the ones who know how to cut wood. Remember this pasuk. This pasuk is very important. When Chiram heard the words of Shlomo, he was very happy. Baruch Hashem Hayom. Do you hear how the man is talking? Do you hear how this man is talking? I mean, this sounds like the boy down the block in Chris and Arnold. Baruch Hashem. Geleibte der Beshefer. The Heiliger der Beit Yisraelo. Blessed be the Orem. He sounds like one of us. Baruch Hashem Hayom. Blessed is God today. Hashem Atam le David ben Chacham. It's more than the Baruch Hashem. He sees this wisdom as a gift of God. It's a divine gift. Asher natan David ben Chacham, a wise son, al ha'om harav hazeh, these great people. Vayishmach ma'od. You know, it doesn't really say very often in Tanakh. You know, feelings are not always expressed in Tanakh. We have a number of times where it says, yes, Michal loved David, the people loved David. But to say about somebody that he's happy, and not only he's happy, he's very happy. That's in this week's Sedra. I'll tell you exactly what she said. I'll tell you exactly what she said. At the end, in this week's Sedra, there's always a relationship. Isn't that fascinating? Whatever you learn, there's a relationship to the Sedra. In the Sedra, Moshe Rabbeinu, who was so troubled for 80 years, he is troubled about the fact that his people are, his brethren are enslaved in Egypt, and finally God appears to him at the burning bush, and he tells him, go to old Pharaoh and tell him, let my people go. And Moshe Rabbeinu refuses. I mean, the biggest parasha in Shemot is the refusal. There are five separate and distinct reasons that he gives for refusing. He says, no, mi anochi, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? I can't talk. I'm a stutterer, a stammerer. I'm a kvater chvablashan. When I will come there, they're not going to believe me. They're going to say that God didn't appear to you. And when after 7 days he has run out of all excuses, he finally says to God, do me a favor, shlach no biyad tishlach, send anybody you want. Rashi explains what he means is, send my older brother. So God tells him, and this is the pasuk that the lady over there was referring to. The pasuk says the tongue, Vayichar af Hashem v'Moshe. It's finally, you see, it's at the end. God gets angry with him. Because when, on his fifth refusal, when he says, Shlach no biyat tishlof, send anybody else, you know what that refusal means? That refusal really means that he's run out of excuses. And he's sort of just saying, send anybody. Why? Because all of his previous refusals, there was a reason behind it. They're not going to believe me. They're not going to trust me. I can't talk. Who am I? I'm unworthy. Shlach no biyad tishlach means he's just plain stubborn. So Vayichar af Hashem v'Moshe, God gets angry with Moshe v'Yomer, and he said, Hallo Aaron achicha halevi, your brother Aaron, your dati, I know ki daber yedaber, who he's going to speak for you. V'hinei kam hu yotzei l'kratech, he's coming out toward you. V'ro'acho, he will see you. V'samach b'libo, and he will be happy in his heart. So this is, I mean, if you remember, it means this is one of the places where it says that somebody's happy. Here we're talking about Chidam, who's a guy. And since he's a guy, a Gentile, a non-Jew. And he says he is very happy, the Pasuk testifies about him that he's very happy. And he says, Baruch Hashem! Baruch Hashem! Not Baruch Hashem, Baruch Yudke Vavke. You know what it really means? It really means that there's a relationship that has developed over here between Chiram and David. The relationship between Chiram and David is not merely a commercial one. It's good for business. The relationship between Chiram and David is a relationship where David and now Shlomo after him are having a spiritual impact. Listen to the way the man talks. Listen how happy he is. How happy he is. And what's he happy about? He's happy about the fact that God has given such wisdom to a son of David who now wants to build the Beit HaMikdash. Shlomo is going to make him a partner in the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. Making him a partner in the construction means not merely a business partner. We're talking about somebody who means a great deal in the world out there, who has now made a decision for God. The word of Torah is going out from Zion. Shlomo HaMelech sees Chiram as a tremendous success story. And what he wants to do now is, he wants to deepen that relationship. Because by deepening that relationship, he feels that he's going to make inroads into the non-Jewish world. Especially when we will find out what is Tzor all about. What is Tzor? We're going to find out more about Tzor, Tyre, when we come to Sefer Yechezkel, I'm going to read a few sections from Sefer Yechezkel. Tsar had been was really the epicenter of commerce in the ancient world. The ships from Tsar plied the seven seas. The relationships that Tsar had with the world, unbelievable. It's going to be described. It will be described by Yeshayahu. It's going to be described by Yirmiyahu. But the one who's going to give us the most magnificent description of all is going to be Yechezkel. While Yechezkel spends about a chapter or so upon each of the nations of the world, what's going to happen to them as a result of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and either because they remained silent or because they participated, he's going to single out Tsar for three magnificent chapters wherein he describes in the words of God what's going to happen to Tsar. The destruction of Tsar is going to be total. I mean, I'm already jumping. What I'm really telling you is the end of the story. What seems to be starting off so successfully in this pasuk, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, is going to end up in absolute and abject failure. Shlomo is not going to succeed. He's going to fail. He's going to fail in the same way that Avraham Avinu failed. I'm afraid to say it because you may misunderstand me here. Shlomo HaMelech seems to see his period in messianic terms, and therefore he acts messianically. You know, invariably and inevitably, messianic people are going to mess things up. You have to look at the world in real terms. Okay, all right. Now that we've made that ugly comment, we'll... let me take you to two Mamore Chazal that are fascinating. Yechezkel, 480 years later, is going to be talking about the king of Tsar. And Chazal say, you know who it is? Chiram. Same Chiram, you understand, 500 years later. 500 years later. Hey, this fellow Chiram, I mean, this is, he out Van Winkles with Van Winkle. But there's another man of Chazal. Shiver your timbers, shake you up. After the tragic incident between Yosef and his brothers in Parsha Vayeshev, it says, "Vayehi ba'eit ahi." It came to pass at that time, "Vayede Yehuda mi'eit echav." Yehuda went down from amongst his brothers, "Vayet," and he pitched his tents Ad Ish Adulami, until a man from Adulam, Ushmo Chira. Chazal say that self same Chira, I imagine 1,000 years later that Basha didn't remember how to pronounce his name correctly, he's really Chiram. According to that, it really means that Chiram, by the time of his destruction after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, is about 1500 years old. Now, obviously it doesn't mean that you have to take it literally. Chazal didn't mean that, you know, we thought that old is Mesushelach, 963 years, I think, Methuselah. Here we have somebody who lives 1500 years. That's not what Chazal is saying. The Chazal does not have to be taken literally. But what Chazal is saying is that there's a certain similarity. And I believe the similarity is the following. we're told about Yehuda. This is a story about Yehuda. What's the purpose of the story of Yehuda? To tell us that he ultimately lives with his daughter-in-law Tamar, from whom the twins Peretz and Zerah are born. Chira doesn't really seem to add anything to the whole story. I have to know who his friends are. Who needs to know the identity of that he had a friend and his friend's name was Chira? Unless, of course, it's history replaying itself. There is the Chira-Yehuda relationship. Remember, David and Shlomo are all, they are same family, right? Direct descendants. David is born in the parsha of Yehuda and Tamar. So that Yehuda has a friend, Chira. What's the purpose of this friend? The friend helps him out. They enter into a commercial kind of relationship. What does Yehuda need him for? Obviously, there are already the beginnings of Yehuda, in a sense, moving outward. In a sense, the idea that he is going to have some kind of an influence on the society in which he lives. This deepens later on in the days of David with another person by the name of Chiram. It doesn't have to be the same person. By Shlomo, it's going to reach its peak. Yes?
Here it says that Chiram is used like Pharaoh.
Just as the kings of Egypt are called Paro, the kings of Tsar were called Chira or Chira. The only thing, of course, is the Gemara does say, seems to indicate that they're the same person. So I'm saying it doesn't mean that they're really the same person. But a similar relationship exists. The Yehuda Chira relationship, the David Chira relationship, the Shlomo Chira relationship. And there will be similar relationships. It's going to become even deeper. And if you want an indication how deep it's going to become, and the extent to which it's going to be a failure, Achav marries Izebel. And Izebel is the daughter of Edbal, king of Sidon. Zor and Sidon were neighboring and in a sense similar kingdoms. It means that the relationship that now begins between Chiram and Shlomo is one that's ultimately going to become a familiar relationship by the marriage of Achav. And you know what that's going to bring? That's going to bring Avodah Zarah, idolatry and pagan and heathen practices into Eretz Yisrael in a way unparalleled. But it's going to become worse. Yehoram, the son of Yehoshaphat, king of Yehuda, is going to marry Ataliah, who is the daughter of Izebel. Do I have to tell you? We're going to see later what Ataliah is. Ataliah, in a fit, kills all of the children of the house of David, except for one. Yoash is 5 years old, and he's hidden by the Kohanim in the Beth HaMikdash. Do you understand what the relationship between Shlomo and Chiram is going to lead to ultimately? It's going to lead ultimately to nearly the total destruction of the house of Shlomo HaMelech and David. But at this point in time, what Shlomo is doing is he feels that he's taking a great step forward in entering into this relationship with Chiram. And take a look. Look at the way Chiram speaks. Vayismach Maod, he's very happy. Vayomer Baruch Hashem, Hayom Hashem, Atam David Ben Kokoma, Al Omar Abazer. Vayishlach Chiram al Shlomo Leimar. Chiram sent the following message to Shlomo. Shamati et Asher Sholach Delai. I heard, I understood the message that you sent to me. Ani e'eset kol chefzich, I'm going to do all that you wish. Batzei arozim u'batzei beroshim, cedar and birch trees. Avodai yoridu min halvonon, my servants are going to bring it down from Lebanon, Yama, along the sea coast. I mean, by the way, the Tyre and Sidon of today, I mean, that's precisely where Tzor and Sidon were. Broshim of Cyprus? I should have known, thank you.
Thank you.
Huh? I'm trying to remember. The only way I know the names of trees is on West Hempstead. What? There was elm and maple and Hempstead's
and birch.
There was a cypress. I don't remember cypress.
No, cypress. I don't go.
There was poplar. Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Where else do we have a whole shchuna with trees? Ephrat and Ashkelon. I was given instructions. We went for Shabbos to Ashkelon. So I said you have to wait till you come to the section that are trees. You know, like Mamish, Erez and this and that, and we have to get to Rakefet, right? Rakefet is not a tree. What's Rakefet? It's a flower. Alright, back to let's go. My servants are going to bring it down from the Lebanon along the sea. I'm going to place them dovrot. Dovrot are rafts. When I come to this passage, I think of Tom Sawyer or which one, Huckleberry Finn, going down the Mississippi, but he's going to tie the cedars together, make them into rafts, and his people are going to bring it down until the place where you tell me I should send it. He's going to end up sending it to Yafo. You'll separate them there. From there, you're going to carry it further. The price, we're going to have to talk, we're going to begin talking today about the price. You're going to do my wish, to give the food to sustain my house. So Chiron gave to Shlomo the cedar and the cypress trees, whatever he needed. Shlomo, Natan Chiron, Shlomo gave to Chiron Esrim Elef Korachitim Makolet Lebeiton. Now you know where the word Makolet comes from, you understand? Shlomo gave to Chiron 20,000 kor of wheat. That's a lot of wheat. Makolet, so the Mitzudas David says Makolet, and Rashi says it comes from the Loshin Ma'achal, food, except that the Aleph is swallowed up. It's like Ma'acholet, Ma'achal for the house. The Esrim Kor of Shemen and 20 Kor of Shemen. Kor is a very big measure. Kapit, or oil that was beaten. Kol Giten Shlomo L'Chiram Shona B'Shona. That's what Shlomo would give to Chiram year by year. Now we learned the next pasuk, but the next pasuk is now one of the problems we'll deal with, and then there are a few pasukim in pasuk in Perek 9. Hashem Natan Chachma to Shlomo, God gave wisdom to Shlomo Kasher Dibelo as he spoke to him. By Yiv Shalom, there was peace between Chiram and between Shlomo. By Yichritu Brit Shnehem, and they both entered into a covenant. Now to chapter 9. Chapter 9. Pasuk 10. Tet Yud. And it came to pass at the end of 20 years, Asher Bona Shlomo et Shnei HaBatim, that Shlomo had built the two houses, at Beit Hashem and Beit HaMelech, the house of God and the house of the king. We will see that it took him 7 years, 7 years to build the Beit HaMikdash, and then afterwards he built his house for 13 years. Not that it means that his house was bigger. It's just that the work for the Beit HaMikdash he did with great resolve and with great speed. And his own house, so he let it schlep for 13 years. You know, if you don't do today, you'll do to tomorrow. I was going to make some kind of joke about Kavanim. I mean, maybe Kavanim were giving out the telephones, you know. Don't take a telephone from a Kavlan. All right. So here comes the pasuk that has to shake us. Chiram Melech Tzor Nisor Shlomo Batzei Arozim Ubatzei Broshim Ubazor Lechol Chet. So Chiram, the king of Tzor, carried or raised, uplifted Shlomo with the cedar and the cypress and gold, all that he wanted. Oz yitein hamelech Shlomo lechidam etzvim yibedetz hagalil. Then King Shlomo gave to Chidam 20 cities in the Galil. This is a problematic pasuk, and I'm going to have to take you over here. Of course, I'm going to teach you the real pshat over here.
What did she just say again?
She says that this pasuk is quoted as saying that you're allowed to give away land of Eretz Yisrael. He gave away 20 cities in the Galil. 20 cities in the Galil. Not 6 cities or 7 cities. Shlomo HaMelech gave away 20 cities in the Galil.
But who said
he's
right?
Huh?
Who said he's
well, so somebody should have condemned him for it. The Pasuk should condemn. God should appear to him and say, how can you do this? There should be demonstrations in the street. And we're talking about Shlomo. And even Chazal, our rabbis, who will condemn Shlomo for having had too many wives or too many horses, nobody condemns him for having given away 20 cities in the Galil.
Because most of them sat in Galus and they didn't think.
Nobody was living in Galus then. You're wrong. How do you like that? I don't often say that. Wait till you hear the truth. Wait. It's a serious problem. It's a serious problem only to somebody who hasn't learned the Mefarshim. I remember, I think it was Oslo was in September at some. I think it was in the Shomron, and Dan Tichon, member of the Knesset from the Likud, comes over and says, "Father Rav, many asima pasuk azeh." He says in the Knesset, the guys at Tzadikim, you understand, from Labor, were telling him, "Shlomo halama tan eschim yi kacha katu." So therefore you're going to say that if for peace, by peace, because I've really taken you from a pasuk in Perek Hay, what did the pasuk in Perek Hay say that there was peace between Shlomo and Chiram? So first of all, maybe I should tell you that on that pasuk in Perek Hay, there's also a big problem. Because it says, but we have to see what the halach is. So it says over there that there was peace, and over there it says, Vayichritu Brit Shneim, the two of them entered into a covenant. There's a beferish pasuk in Torah, Lo Tichrot Lehem Brit. You're not permitted to enter into a covenant. The question is, how did Shlomo enter into a covenant with Chiram? Tosfos asks this, the Tosfot in Mesechta Avodah Zarah Daf Chof Amud Aleph, the top Tosfos. So we're going to have to see what Tosfos says, but first we're going to have to see what do the Rishonim say on Tanakh. But wait a minute, there are more surprises waiting for you here. So he gave him 20 cities in the Galil. By Yetzir Chiram Yitzor, Chiram left Zor, lit Odet Ha'arim. He went to see the cities. Asher Natan Bo Shlomo. He went to see the cities that Shlomo gave him. Velo Yashru Beinav. He didn't like them. Vayomer, and he said, Asher Tzachnish. And he said, Meharim Ha'ele, one of these cities, Asher Natatoli Achi. Brother, my brother, what are these cities that you gave me? Vayikro Lahem. Eretz Kavul. He called them Eretz Kavul. Kavul means from, not that there are cables there, but it's like you get tied up. It was like muddy.
Your foot sinks in.
Muddy cities. Meharim ha'il asher natata li'achi. Vayikra lahem, he called them Eretz Kavul. The land like where you get tied up, you get fazunken and fazumped and fashlungen into the butts.
In the marsh.
In the marshes, right? The chula. Echvesa was the chula. Swampland. Adayom hazeh. Now, of course, the mystery is even greater. He gives him, you understand, most probably with great fanfare, he tells him that we're going to give you 20 cities in the Galil, and obviously Chiram, this is Aseiche, you understand, he's Aseiche, he's a businessman. He looks a gift horse in the mouth. That's a Aseiche. He goes out and he takes a look at the cities, and he takes a look and he sees that the cities doesn't like them. Take them back. If you want the mystery to grow even more, there is another part of the mystery. In Divrei Hayamim, it says, that Chiram gave Shlomo 20 cities. Now, who gave who? Here in Malachim, it says that Shlomo gave Chiram. There in Divrei Hayam, and we're going to see the Pesukim in Divrei Hayam, it says that Shlomo Chiram gave to Shlomo. So there is one pshat that says that in Divrei Hayamim we're told that Chiram gave the cities back. There's a lot of problems with that. In other words, half the story here and half the story there. And even if that is the story, it still does not justify Shlomo having offered it to him. And maybe he would have taken it. What right does he have to give it away? So there are two major questions. What right does he have to give it away? And what right does he have to enter into a treaty and a covenant? That pasuk, there are many psukim in Torah, but the operative one, there are going to be a number in Sefer Shemot, but the operative one is a pasuk in Parashat Vaetchanan. At the end of Vaetchanan in Dvarim, it says the following. Chapter 7. In Vayetchanan, Ki Yivyachah Hashem Elokecha El Haaretz Asher Atalbo Hashem El Rishtom, and God, your God, is going to bring you to the land that you come there to inherit. V'noshal Goyim Radim in Panecha, is going to remove many nations from before you. The Chiti, the Girgashi, the Amori, the Knani, the Prizi, the Chivi, the Yevusi, Shiva Goyim, seven nations, Rabin V'atzumi Mimeko, who are many and mightier than you. God is going to give them before you, and you will smite them, destroy them utterly. Lo tichrok lahem brit, do not make a covenant. Lo teichanem. We're going to have to talk about this word teichanem, or these two words, lo teichanem. Let's say for the moment you shall not favor them. Huh? That's going to be another one of the questions. Told me out. Are Tzor and Sidon one of those nations or not? Now, what you do have to remember is Sidon is the firstborn son of Canaan back in Parashat Noach. So, therefore, if we're talking about Canaan, clearly Sidon has to be included. Fine. All right, we got out of that one. But wait a minute, there's more. The pasuk goes on to say, "V'lo titchatein dam." You should not enter into marital relationships with them. "Bitcholot titel of no." You shouldn't give your daughter to a son. "Ubitalot tikal v'amecha." You shouldn't take his daughter for your son. In Parashat Mishpatim, here in Sefer Shemot, we're also going to have psukim. A pasuk in Mishpatim, "Lo tichrot lahem." These psukim are important. In Parashat Mishpatim, this is the last two psukim of chapter 23 in Exodus. The last two psukim. Psukim 32 and 33. Now listen carefully. These psukim are extremely important for an understanding of psukim in Dvarim. They complement one another. Lo tichrot lahem v'leloheihem b'rit. You shall not make a covenant with them nor with their gods. I don't know how you make a covenant with their gods, unless, of course, the meaning of this is that if you make a covenant with them, you know what it means? Ultimately, it's going to mean that their God is going to infiltrate. Shlomo HaMelech made the covenant with Chiram, and generations later, Achav already marries the daughter of the king of Sidon, and Yehoshaphat, his enikel, a great grandson, Yehoram, the son of Yehoshaphat, is going to marry Ataliah. And then it says, Lo yeshvu ba'artzecha. you should not make a covenant with them so that they should not live in your land. Pen yachtiu otchali, lest they will cause you to sin to me. Ki tavodet Eloheim, because you're going to end up worshipping their gods. Ki yiyah lechol amaykish, the guy living in Eretz Yisrael is going to be a stumbling block for you. All right. So we have two major questions. Question number one, the most major of all, how does Shlomo HaMelech give Hiram 20 cities in the Galil? How does he do it? Second question is, how does he enter into a covenant? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, Anlo Techonein. I said we would get back to that pasuk. Lo Tichrot Lehem Brit, don't make a covenant with them. Lo Techonein, you shall not favor them. So it's... That's in Vayet Hanan. You don't have. The Gemara says, three pshotim, and lo Techonein. Gemara in Avodah Zarah. I think it's around Daf Chof. I mean, I can find it for you. One is, lo tite lahem chen. You shouldn't give them grace. From this, the Gemara learns the halacha. You're not supposed to say, my, how beautiful that Avodah Zarah is. Or, I'll meet you tonight in front of the Church of the Nativity at 8 o'clock. In other words, by using the church or the mosque or something else as a point of reference, in other words, go to the church and turn right, you are giving it chen. Lo titein lahem chen. The second pshat in the Gemara is lo titein lahem, you're not permitted to give to a goy matnat chinam, a gift for nothing. Now, watch the meanings that are coming out of this word that has four letters, te, cha, name. So the first pshat, one pshat is, it comes from the word chen. Don't give them, you know, don't grace or favor them. The second pshat is that it comes from the word chinam. You're not allowed to give a gift for nothing. What happens if it's for my benefit, if I'm giving a gift because of services that I have already received from the guy, or services that I hope or expect to receive, then it's not chinam. The Gemara, for example, uses this in a fascinating way. The halacha is, an eved knani, a non-Jewish slave in my home, I'm not permitted to free. The Torah says, lo olam bahem ta'avodu, you should work them forever. They and their children and their children's children are supposed to work for you. So I believe the Gemara says about Rabbi Gamliel that he came into shul and there were nine people, including Rabbi Gamliel, and the tenth man was his servant Tevi. He had a knani. So you know what he did? I mean, they needed a tzenta for mincha. So he freed him. What's the halacha when you free an eved kanani? He becomes a complete Jew. So now we have a tenth man. He freed him. So the Gemara asked, well, what do you mean? The la'olam behem tavodu, you're supposed to work them forever. How can he do it? Lo teichonein, you're not supposed to give them a gift for nothing. So the Gemara says, when is there an isra of giving a gift if it is for nothing? But what happens if I'm benefiting from it? I need a tenth man to the minion. So I'm benefiting. If I'm benefiting, it's okay. The third pshat in the Gemara, and every one of them is halacha. The third pshat in the Gemara is lo titein lahem chanaya bakarka. It doesn't mean giving up a parking space that you give to nobody. Nobody. Chanaya bekarka means to give a person a resting place, and we're not talking about a karka for a kvuha. Chanaya means to somebody to park himself. Lo tite lahem chanaya bekarka, you're not permitted to give them land so that they should now have a presence in the land. The Rambam explains the halacha in the Yad HaZaka. He says that if they don't own land in Eretz Yisrael, yeshivatam, their living in the land, is going to be arai. It's going to be always of a temporary nature. Whereas if you give them land or you sell them land, then their yishuv, their living in the land, is going to become yeshivat keva, permanent. And you're not allowed to do that. I still haven't gotten to talk about Shlomo's 20 cities yet. You know, I may just stretch it out so that we'll give the answers next week, and meanwhile you'll be worried about it. But wait.
Isn't there a connection between Ba'al
Hanan and... That's very interesting. Never thought of it. Never thought of it. It would be Masali, a great Chassidish drasha for Shalashidus. Not there. But it means the following. By the way, this halacha is a pivotal halacha in the question of selling the land of Eretz Yisrael for Shemitah year. One of the halachic hurdles that has to be overcome is Lo Techanim. What do you mean you're going to sell all the land in Eretz Yisrael? You know, from a messianic religious Zionists for whom, as people say, there's only one mitzvah in the Torah, and that's the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz. And these frummy woomies understand that Yishuv Haaretz is the most important thing. They come to Eretz Yisrael, and they come up with a plan to circumvent Shemitah by doing what? By selling all the land to a guy. But you're not allowed to sell the land to a guy. All right. So it's all the same question, and it flows from the question of what are we going to do with Shlomo HaMelech? What are we going to do with Shlomo HaMelech? So we're going to take you on a journey through the Mefarshim. Of course, we're not going to finish it today, but we will begin the journey, because this is what all of the Mefarshim, everybody's talking about. One approach is, of course, the trade-off approach. If we say that in Melachim we're talking about 20 cities that Shlomo gave to Hiram, and in Divrei Hayamim we're talking about 20 cities that Hiram gave to Shlomo, so it's not giving away land, it is exchange of territory. Exchange of territory according to the Radak. That may be permitted. This is the way he understands it. An exchange of territory. The Ralbag also... that Levi ben Gershon also takes this approach, that we're talking about an exchange of territory. Kfar Niska, he says, Kfar Niska b'sefer Divrei Hayamim, it's already mentioned in Divrei Hayamim, ki Hiram notan gam kein l'Shlomo ayarot. Now, it's not, it wasn't a one-way street where Shlomo gave 20 cities to Hiram, but no, Hiram also gave to him, and Hoshiv behem et b'nei Yisrael, and he settled Jews there. It says in Divrei Hayamim that he brought Jews and he settled them there. V'ro'yehoyolios came. These are the operative words of the Ralbag. It has to be that, like that. Ki lo yitachin lemelech lema'et et Eretz Yisrael. Lo yitachin lemelech. It's not possible that a king of Israel is going to diminish Eretz Yisrael. If we are going to, if we want to put it into more contemporary language, Lo yale al adat, lo yale al adat, lemelech lemaet et Eretz Yisrael. Lo yale al adat lemaet et Eretz Yisrael. Okay, very good. Yes. Certainly, the truth is both Tzor and Sidon are part of biblical Eretz Yisrael. Because according to the Torah, and clearly, it's clearly expressed in the Gemara, Mishnah, at the beginning of the Masechta Gittin, that the northwest boundary of Eretz Yisrael, the western boundary, of course, is the coast. How far up the coast? The Gemara says, up to Hor HaHor. This is a different Hor HaHor. There's a Hor HaHor in the desert where Aaron was buried. There's a Hor HaHor, which is a spot on the coast, north of Beirut. What else? No, according to many, even Beirut is part of biblical Eretz Yisrael. Let me see.
It's not out there. It only goes up the side.
It only goes up the side. There's a point further up that's called Horhor. What? It's a port city. What's the port city north of Beirut? No. Tyre and Tyre is Tsar. It's not on the tip of my tongue. There's a famous port city. That's where the Koreans wanted to send Scud missiles to Syria through the. All right, okay. It'll come to us. You'll look at a map. Okay. The Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't have to say Damascus according to the Psukim. It's most probably included in the biblical boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, because the biblical boundaries go up near to Aram, south of Aram Tzova, which is
Aram Assyria.
Yeah, which is the northern part of Chalav. Chalavi Jews. Chalav is on the border of Eretz, which is north of Damascus. All right, the Ralbag also, the Ralbag in his Perush on Tanakh, at the end of every major section, he tells us what it is that we learn from this section. Says the Ralbag the following, Lahudia to tell us, this parasha comes to tell us, Shein roi lemelech lahamit Eretz Yisrael. It's not correct for a king to diminish the size of Eretz Yisrael, aval, but his task is laharchiva, to broaden and widen Eretz Yisrael. The kasher yavol ha'echrech latet mimena, if it becomes necessary to give away a part of Eretz Yisrael, roi sheyitein ha'sheyot yoter ma'ap ha'toelet, then you should give. So you see what he learns? He learns that the land was taka swamp land. It was not fit for human consumption. So he says that we learn from here, not only shouldn't you give altogether, but if you have to give for some reason, then give away land that is small. It's not easy to accept the words of the Ralbag. Remember, David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech wants to cement a relationship, and we're talking about a relationship that's been going on for 20 years. 20 years between Shlomo and Hiram. It's a relationship that's been going on between David and Hiram yet before. So what do you think? Egeitim aran rikin katz in zak? Is that a nice way of doing it? I mean, you know, go sell him a cat in... God, I wouldn't say that. It's very difficult to assume that Shlomo HaMelech intentionally said, listen, go out and find the most miserable land and this is what we're going to give. It doesn't make sense. There are other approaches, and I will explain the other approaches. There are other approaches in the Mefarshim that make a great deal of sense. The Malbim and the Abarbanel. In other words, it's the Abarbanel first, and then the Malbim in his parish simply says that Hasar Don Yitzchak Don Isaac Abarbanel has already explained this parasha the way it should be explained and the way it has to be understood. He did not give one single sha'al, one centimeter of Eretz Yisrael to Chiram. No. It's also lo tichane. You're not allowed to give them chanaya bekarka. That's clear. What did he do? What did he do? So we learned in Perek 5. We learned in Perek 5 that he gave him an amount of grain and an amount of oil every year. So you know what he did? Shlomo went ahead and he said that I'm giving you a mashkanta on these 10 cities. From these 10 cities, the grain and the oil that will be produced in these 10 cities, this is where you are going to get your payment from. They were in the Galil because these cities, why does it say that they were in the Galil? Because these cities were nearby Tzor. In other words, the man, Shlomo, is not giving Chiram Kinyan Haguf, an acquisition in the land of Eretz Yisrael. He is giving him what's called in the Gemara Kinyan Peirot. Kinyan Peirot means what he acquires is that the produce that's going to come from this land will go to pay his debt, the Chira. That's what it is. And the Gemara says, Kinyan Peirot, Lav Kinyan Aguf Dami. If I have a Kinyan, that an acquisition is something that gives me the right to its produce, does not mean that I own the land. You know what it means? The security, the sovereignty was Shlomo's. And the control in every way, shape, and form. It was completely controlled by Shlomo, more than that. In Divrei Yom, it says that Shlomo HaMelech settled Jews over there. He settled Jews there. What went wrong? So the Das Sofrim says a very beautiful word. The Das Sofrim is Gavra Yidhu, Rav Chaim Dov Rabinovich, an elderly Jew already, Azok and Luflid lives in Yerushalayim, wrote a parish called Das Sofrim on all of Tanakh. So he says the problem with it was the following. Listen, you're going to ask a diamond dealer to assess a horse for you, you're not going to get a proper assessment. The man knows how to look at a diamond, but he can't tell the difference between a horse's teeth or their leg, nothing. Tsar was a mercantile nation. The fact is, at the time of Shlomo HaMelech, Tsar was an island, and the Navi often refers to Tsar as an island. But you know what happened to the island of Tsar? When Nebuchadnezzar wanted to conquer it, he brought landfill from Lebanon and he made a, what do you call it? A causeway. Just as the Romans built a causeway up to Masada, Nebuchadnezzar built a causeway. And then most probably over the course of centuries, they just kept, it became a landfill site, you know, right off the Bell Parkway. And ultimately it became part of the mainland. This has been done in a lot of places. Man can create islands and man can turn islands into ice islands. So the Abravanel says, Shlomo HaMelech never gave anything to the king of Tsar. What he gave him was a commitment that from these lands, it will be, he will get what he needs. But now I'm telling you, the Das Sofrim, says the Das Sofrim, he's a shipping magnet. That's what Tsar is. Tsar is, rules the seven seas. So he's a sailor. He's a sailor. He comes and he takes a look at a piece of land. He doesn't know how to assess it. He sees a swamp. What does a Jew see when he sees a swamp? A Jew sees a challenge. We'll get rid of the swamp land and we're going to turn it in. A Jew takes a look at a desert and he says, what are you talking about, desert? We can make the desert blossom. Shlomo HaMelech takes a look at these 20 cities and he sees, well, these 20 cities are going to produce all of the wheat, the grain, the oil, everything that is needed to pay Tsar. Hiram can't see it. I think Shlomo should have understood already that the guy has Goyusha Eichen. If he can't take a look at a miserable, so to speak, piece of Eretz Yisrael and see its awesome potential, then he just doesn't see what's there before his eyes. What Divrei Hayyam is telling us is, yes, Hiram returned the land. And you know what else it says over there? Shlomo HaMelech went and he settled Jews over there. You know what he was going to do? I'm going to show you, Hiram. You think that I gave you land that is bad. Nothing will grow there. I'm going to show you. Yiddish Ahem are going to go to work on these 20 cities in the Galil, and you're going to have every year all and more. More than what I owe you. So it's clear. Right? It was nothing to go on. And all of the areas of Yehuda Vishomer, nobody even lived there for 2,000 years. Nobody took anybody else's land. So that's the approach of the Abravanel. That's the approach of the Malbim. a remez in the psukim. I don't know if there's a... I think the remez in the psukim is simply the fact you have to know what tzor is. I mean, the Das Sofer is a magnificent approach. You have to know what tzor is. It's a mercantile... They don't know. Could we imagine that Shlomo HaMelech was going to give him land that was simply swampland? Shlomo looked at it one way, and Hiram looked at it another way. There is going to be another approach. The other approach, I said that Tesis in the Sefer Avodah Zarah asks the question. So one of the answers that Tesis says, and Tesis asks the question, how did he enter into a covenant and a treaty with him? So he says, and this may be very important for the general theme that we developed last week and this week. Hiram was Ger Toshav. There is a unique category called Ger Toshav. A Ger Toshav is a non-Jew who rejects idolatry, accepts upon himself Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, Seven Noachayit Mitzvot. That kind of a non-Jew is permitted residence in Eretz Yisrael. And that's obviously going to fit in with Baruch Hashem. So obviously by his Baruch Hashem he has demonstrated that he is no longer the idolater that he once was, Baruch Hashem. He has rejected idolatry. He is an active partner without whom the first Beit HaMikdash could not be built. But if you will recall, we said a Medrash last week, that herein was Shlomo HaMelech's error. The Mishkan that was built by Jews in the desert and only by kosher Yiddish hand was never destroyed. The first Beit HaMikdash built by consort together with non-Jews was destroyed. And I'm going to show you, Mi'at Hashem, next week we'll show you Psukim at the beginning of the construction of the second Beit HaMikdash. There are all sorts of other elements living in Eretz Yisrael that decide they want to get onto the bandwagon. And Zerubbabel, who is the leader of the Jewish community, and Ezra and Nehemiah try to make certain that nobody else will participate, even if the building is going to be a great deal less impressive than the first Beit HaMikdash. They want to make it as much as possible a building that is all Avodah Ivrit. What wasn't that? The Avodah Ivrit, Hebrew, Jewish work. Of course, ultimately, the second Beit HaMikdash that's going to be rebuilt by Hordas is going to be a mixture of Jewish and non-Jewish work, and therefore it's going to be destroyed. The third Beit HaMikdash is going to be the work of God or the Jewish people alone, and therefore it will not be destroyed. All right, but we're not finished yet with this whole sugya of land and covenant and treaty and the whole relationship between Shlomo and Hiram. It deserves another week. Okay.